Hi, this is
Love
Tom
Talk
Benedict.
Radio.
Hi, this is Tom Benedict, and I am on Rare Bird Lit Blog Talk Radio, and I'm with Alan First, and Alan is the renowned international spy novelist, and he has a new book coming out, Mission to Paris, and I have my book coming out imminently, Peloponnesia, and about a screenwriter and a screenplay and a producer and sort of characters in the Hollywood community. Alan, how are you doing?
I'm good. How are you? I just finished the new book, so I feel that's a big weight off me, I got to say, although there's a lot of pre-production that has to be done, copy editing and flap copy and all the rest of it. I'll be busy. The book doesn't come out till June, I think June 6th. I always come out on Father's Day, so whenever Father's Day is.
Is that something you try, that's something you try to do, or that's a
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. And that's for a reason, the reason being that it's impossible to buy a present for a man. You know, I mean, so a book is always a good thing. It's either that or another polo shirt or another tie or another something that somebody doesn't wear. It's just hard to buy presents for men. So we come out on Father's Day, and it's a good book for dad, I guess. Anyhow, it seems to work good.
Spy books and international intrigue and solid historical context. I think that all that's a fatherly area, definitely.
I
thought you were going to tell
but
some sentimental story about your own dad and that he always wanted you to write a book and he died before he saw your first book in publication, but, you know.
That is true.
Is that true?
Sure.
So that's the subconscious reason why.
Oh, maybe. Yeah, I don't know. I don't think so. Because the fact is what's happened to me, and I've been on bestseller list the last five books, is I have a lot of women readers now. I honestly think this may be the only unusual thing I've done as a somebody who writes about historical espionage or spy novels, whatever you want to call them. I get a lot of women readers, more all the time. And it's not the kind of book that women normally read, but they like these books. Why? I don't know. It's good, though.
How do you
know? But I could come out on Mother's Day.
But other people would not want to buy, you know, I think that in their own minds they wouldn't want to buy the book for their mother, of course. But how do you know who your readers are? I mean, what kind of communication do you have with them?
Random House basically lets me know. That's one way. But another way is I get a lot of email off my website, you know, Write the Author. And I began to see more women about 5 years ago, and it's increased. And then I go out on tour every year. Generally, I'll just do Random House has me on tour literally every year. So I spend 2 to 3 weeks in June basically on the road going to 5 or 6 or 7 cities. And when the hardcovers come out, as they will in June, those tend to be Chicago, L.A., San Francisco, New York, Boston, and Washington, D.C. But in the alternate years, when my paperback, my trade paperback comes out, then I go to smaller cities. I'll go to Little Rock, New Orleans, it's all over the place. San Diego, Seattle. Well, there's lots of cities. There's more cities than you think once you're a writer.
And so every 2 years or every 3 years you've been trying to get a book done?
Every 2 years. No, I haven't been trying. I'm under contract. I have to do it.
And how, what's your schedule? I mean, what kind of schedule do you have for that in terms of your writing?
Well,
it takes me
about 10 months to write one of these things. It really takes me about 10 months. No more, no less. Always the same, 9 to 10 months. And the research varies, but I will start research probably before I go on tour, but not in a way that people shouldn't think about it like going to school or anything. It's a pleasure for me to lie around reading these old 30s and 40s books. It's just something I like. It's weird, but I love it. I never tire of it. It's very strange. I don't think it's necessarily normal, but I'm fixated on that period. There's something about that period. And I'm sorry, go ahead.
So let's roll back a second. So you have a dramatic kernel, you have the idea of what you want to write about, or you found an area, and then you start, immerse yourself in that area with a lot of reading?
Not quite. I pick a country somewhere in Europe, and then I learn laboriously the political history of that country back 10, 15, 20 years. Once I know the political history of the country, I get some idea of what the dark side of that would be, or the unknown side, or the secret side, because all countries have this. And then once I find usually a real story, I really prefer real stories. When you make up a story, it's a very different kind of novel. But once I have a real story, and almost every book all the books I've written have a real story. Somewhat more specific in some cases, less so in others, but there's always a real story. And then you come up with the logical characters who would have been part of that. And that's how the books are written.
So that will occur as you're doing that research generally, and then you'll sketch out a structure that you're going to write from?
I try, but you know the sad truth is this. Every writer, and I mean every writer, who writes a novel sits down and writes out a kind of framework. And that framework lasts about 60 pages out of 320 manuscript pages. It never lasts. It's always shorter than you think it is. So the other thing is I have to be aware of the major events in Europe during that period and what would happen to my characters in certain places as those things went on. So, you know, when you're writing a historical novel, you have to respect the history.
So do you create a historical a timeline that goes along with your...
Oh, yeah, no, absolutely. Once I know what I want to do, what matters is when you start, because all kinds of things happened between 1933, which is when Hitler came into power, till say around 1942, when the Germans lost at Stalingrad, and everybody in Europe knew that this thing was done, but it was going to take time. So the whole point of view of people there changed from, my God, these people will never leave, we're lost, you know, despair, to more like, oh, well, how can I survive till the end of this thing, and how long will that be? Very different, and you can see it.
So once you get into writing, you're doing like 6 pages a day? Or?
Oh, I wish. From your lips to God's ears. No, I can do 2 pages a day, that's it. That's what Hemingway did, 500 pages a day. All writers write the same amount. They can do about 3 hours a day, and then you can't do it anymore.
And then the rest of the day you...
Well, I do research the rest of the day. I do life the rest of the day, you know, all the errands and stupid stuff that you have to do. So I'm busy, but the actual writing, and I work on a typewriter, the actual writing takes about 3 hours. And I'm revising pages, I'm re-revising pages, and I'm writing new pages in that period of time. It's intense.
Okay, that makes sense to me. That's, you know, I know writers who say, no, I'm in there 8 or 9 hours, and I'm, what?
What?
I don't know what I do.
What
you
are
know,
you doing? I can't believe
5
that.
Hours, I don't know how you can do it. I work on stuff in the afternoon. I revise, and I look at my outline, and I will sketch things, but I really believe in having this chunk of time that's limited where most of the actual writing takes place. When you're doing your research, do you cut and paste? I mean, do you take imagery out? Do you note down little scraps of things that you find, or
constantly, all day, all night? You know, as a writer, Tom, this is 7/24. People talk about 7/24. This actually is 7/24 because I swear, your subconscious mind is working while you're asleep. And a lot of times, if you're a writer, all writers, listen, please, you have an indissoluble problem You get up at 6 or 7 whenever you get up. You get to your workplace by 7:30, 8 o'clock, and you sit down, you turn on whatever machine you're working on, and bang, the answer is there. Now, how that happens, I don't know, but I don't take responsibility for it, but it does happen. Scary.
As far as the reading and watching of films or TV when you're actually in the writing phase, do you limit it to staying focused on the flavor of what you're doing for the most part, or how do you
know
do
the
that?
Reverse? I tend to watch a lot of sports on television, see Friends. I like going to the beach with a dog in the fall and winter and spring. I don't go much in the summer. I'm not an umbrella beach chair type person. I have a screen porch for that out here, which is really nice.
And you're living in
Sag
East
Harbor.
Hampton, you said, or in Sag Harbor?
In the Hampton, in the village of Sag Harbor. The village of Sag Harbor is in the town of East Hampton.
And so you can walk to the
No, beach. I have the bay to walk to, but I don't like to do that. The beach is 6 miles away. So I just jump in my car, go to the beach. It's so nice. There's never anyone there. Maybe somebody with a dog, maybe not. It's incredible.
In the summertime, it gets hard to move around on the weekend.
Oh, my God, in heaven. No, we really have the mobs and the crowds here, especially in the month of August. You don't go out. I mean, you go out, but you go out in these very clever, devious kinds of ways, driving
on
all the back roads and side streets and everything else.
You lived in Europe while you wrote your first books, and then you moved
first
back
three.
To the States. Did that
first
did
three.
Being in Europe
I wrote
help
the
you?
First. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I wrote the first one in Paris, the second one in Paris, and most of the third one in Paris. Those are the early books, Night Soldiers, then a book called Dark Star, then a book called The Polish Officer.
And right when you moved back to the States, did that affect the right, did it change how you wrote? Did it change your, you know, did you feel like you needed to go back and go to the place? Do you go to the places that you're writing about as you write, or do you do it mostly from reading about them?
Well, I've lived in Europe a lot, and I've traveled in Europe a lot, and what I discovered over time is that I know what a European village was like in the 1930s. And I know what a European town was like in the 1930s. And I know what the European cities were like in the 1930s. So I have all that. And that comes from living in Europe. And the fact of the matter is that even in the 80s, when I started living in Paris full time, there was still some of the 40s left. That's less and less true now as Europe gets globalized. It's really changed a lot from what it used to be. They don't let you smoke Gauloises in the cafes anymore. So Paris smells different. You know, it used to smell like French fries and drains and black tobacco cigarette smoke, which was, I loved it.
I went to film school. You know, we met in Paris. We spent time together in Paris, and, you know, those sense memories are very, very strong for me, my film school years and all that time there. And, you know, yeah, in being back there, it does feel more like it's, you know, New York is the same way. New York feels much more sort of, you know, gentrified all over town.
It is. It is. I watched it. I mean, it was a very different city when I grew up there. And I don't know what to tell you. It's just the way the world goes. There's nothing you can do about it. But a lot of Paris.
What's your new book takes place where?
The new book takes place in Paris beginning in the fall of 1938.
And so for that one, you didn't go. There were no places that you thought, I must go back and look at this street, or I must go back and look at this institute, this building, and this institution, anything like that.
No, I have almost perfect internal recall, in all senses, visual, auditory, anything else you want to name, of what it sounds like and feels like to be there. Maybe that's just what writers have. I don't know, but I have it. Thank God.
And what's the plot and context of the new book?
The new book, the hero of the new book is my first American hero, but not really. Let's say he is a movie star. He's been nominated twice for Oscars but never won. He is a Viennese. He was born in Vienna, And he's one of those continental actors like Peter Lorre, like Charles Boyer, all of those people, Hedy Lamarr, who were incredibly wonderful actors and actresses in Hollywood of the late 1930s. He's one of those. And he goes to Paris to make a film for Paramount France, basically. And he gets tangled up in a very interesting kind of way with the actual true story of the book, okay, which is to do with the fact that the Germans, starting in the early 1930s, engaged in what's called political warfare, bribery, propaganda. They tried to weaken the French will to defend itself, and they did. I mean, if you wonder why France lost the war in 21 days, there's a reason. They were not ready to fight that war.
Hmm. And that was for emotional reasons, or it was...
No, it was for money reasons, but certainly emotional reasons played a part of it. After the First World War, there wasn't... If you went to the villages and towns of France, all the women were in black. All the women were in mourning. So many people died. 1.5 million people died. In a country of 50 million people and another 3 million seriously wounded. So there were people who couldn't breathe properly, people with crutches, people missing an arm. That country was just destroyed by that war. And they weren't ready to fight another one. Meanwhile, what the Germans did, and if you look at the newsreels, you'll see it, they made themselves into the greatest warriors that the world had ever known. There were millions of them. They were all strong. They were all fierce fighters. They were this, that, and the other. And it worked. It worked.
What can
and
I
so
say?
Then your actor, it's an American actor?
He is a Warner Brothers contract actor.
And what happens to him in that?
Well, I can't tell you too much more without giving everything away. But basically, he's there. He works on the movie. He gets involved with an American from the American embassy. He gets involved. He is attacked, basically, by these people who want to use his name. He want to use him as what's called an agent of influence. They want him to buy their line and to be interviewed. And this and that and the other. They want him to come to Berlin to be a judge in a film festival. And this is all laid out, how that all this stuff works. And that's what happens to him, and that's how he becomes involved.
Sounds so fascinating. I love this. I can't, what were you saying? I should have asked you for a copy. Are there copies available now, or No.
Only TypeScript is available now. I won't have galleys till May sometime. But if you send me your address, I'll make sure you get a galley.
Okay, thank you.
Of the book, it's pretty. I mean, I have to say, I stand back and I look at it, and it's not like I'm the writer. I look at it and I say, oh, this is pretty good. And I mean, I'm saying that as a reader because, you know, all writers are readers before they're writers.
Well, congratulations again on this. And
let me ask you.
So you finished the text. You finished them. Did you show it to anyone before you gave it to your agent or your publisher?
Never. That's the worst thing you can do. People show it to their family. They show it to their husband. They show it to their wife. No, bad. Don't do that. You're not going to hear what you need to hear. Forget it. You're all alone in this. It's your name that's going on it, and all writers will tell you you're alone. You're just alone out there.
And so then you retype, when you rewrite it, you retype everything. You don't work on a word processing.
No, I just get finished TypeScript and I send it to Random House and they put it on whatever electronic whatever they do. I don't care what they do. Then they publish it.
Do they give you edits on it? Do you have an editor?
Yes, absolutely. I have a good editor at Random House, and she sends me, you know, she questions things. She prompts, she probes, she pushes you. Is this really clear? You know, does this happen as you want it to happen? It's a, you have to go through that process. You can't be completely alone. And then you go through copy editing, which is all the spelling and punctuation. I'm a pretty good speller, and I can punctuate pretty well. But there's always issues, always
and
issues.
The notes that you get from your editor, what form do they take?
They take two forms. They send you a memorandum, which is like a long 4 or 5 pages, single space typed, and with page references. On page 43, blah, 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 blah. But on page 215, you say blah, 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 blah. And then in the manuscript itself, there's a lot of questions about diction, about whether a line can be left out or should be expanded, whether something needs to be explained, etc. So you get that as well. It's not easy to respond to. It takes hours and hours and hours, but it's very worthwhile, and it makes the book better.
And does that document come from one person, or does it feel like several
one
people
person.
Have read the?
No, it comes from one person. I get a response from my agent. That's verbal, and then I get a response from my editor, and that's written.
And the verbal response from your agent, does that include? Is that, you know, Alan, I love you, congratulations, you're a genius, or is there more to it than
that? I really like this book, and however, I feel XYZ, and there's always a little something where that could be better, the end is rushed or something. She's always got something to say. She's very, very smart. She's a good agent. So, you know, I listen to her carefully. She's not wrong.
And
I got an agent in this book too, by the way, Hollywood agent.
You've written about Hollywood before. You have a producer protagonist in two of
That's
your other
right.
books.
That's right. That book was called The World at Night, and it was about a French producer. And because these books are a series, when my hero, Frederick Stahl, goes to Paris, he goes to meet his new producer, the producer of the new movie, the French movie, in his office. And as he's going down the hall, he almost goes into Casson's office, which is the guy from.
So you just kind of include you gave him a walk on in
your
book. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, and other characters reappear. This is not the main characters. Never, with one exception, the main characters don't repeat, but the minor characters often show up. Various Hungarian spies and whatnot. All kinds of people, all the kinds of dark world people, as though they were all running around Europe, which I guess they were. I suppose they were. I believe they were. And they show up they always show up in the books. I mean, not always the same ones, various ones for various amounts of time.
And I know you love movies.
I do.
You love
yes.
movies as much as you used to love movies, or
yes,
you know,
yes, I've always loved the movies. How can you not?
And have any of your have your books had a relationship to film? Have any of them been adapted or optioned and that kind of thing?
They've been optioned, but not made until now. The BBC Four, you know, the people that made Tinker Tailor, the original one. Are doing The Spies of Warsaw with two terrific screenwriters named Dick Clement and Ian LaFrenay, who wrote the original of Traffic.
Those guys are great. Yeah,
English version. You know, I mean, there was an American version with Michael Douglas. Some people didn't like that quite as well, but people loved the English version of it. And these guys were big fans, and they said, we want to do one of your books. And so they did The Spies of Warsaw, which is two books back, because I did Spies of the Balkans since then and then Mission to Paris. So they did The Spies of Warsaw.
And
that's in pre-production.
Prior to that, I mean, over the years, have books been optioned by Hollywood, or what's been your, you know, have you pursued that kind of stuff, or how you just
of course
kind
of I waste. Pursued it. My God, you have to pursue it, but it hasn't. I haven't been lucky or whatever, because it's not really been Hollywood per se. I had one Italian producer, I think named Grimaldi, the guy who did the spaghetti westerns, had one of my books optioned for a while, back when I was still living in Paris. And another independent guy had one of the books for a while. It's gone on and off, here and there, yes and no. Some screenplays have been written, but nothing serious until 2 years ago.
Uh-huh. And so how does that feel? I mean, does that feel like, do you feel detached from that, or you feel like, you know, fine? I mean, what is that, what's the emotions of that, just having something that's in the pipeline?
I don't think about it. I don't trust movies. I'll drink champagne when I see it on a screen, and not until. You just can't. I mean, movies are funny. It's a funny world. But as near as I know, they are going ahead with the production.
Well, those guys are rock solid, so I'm sure that it's, you know, we'll look forward to seeing that. And I wish you good luck, because in filmmaking, nothing is certain. That's my book is kind of about that, really. About
Tell me about your book.
Well, my book is, you know, it's I've been delving into this area of the relationship of text to writer for a while, and my photography and my Shot by the Writer series, and so I've been doing a lot of this things with that with words and paper in my little studio here, and doing these photographic series. And my book Peloponnesia, it's about a producer with a very successful Hollywood producer with dementia, who owns the rights to a screenplay, and the screenwriter has an opportunity to put the film into production with another producer, and he is forced to seek out the producer who owns the script, and who had tried for many years to get it into production. It was the movie that he thought was going to be his best film, and he discovers that the producer is living inside the screenplay, and it's about that relationship, about the relationship of the author to his text, and to why he writes, and what it means to what he's writing for, and what he wants from having his vision understood or put on its feet. And it's also about the relationship of that producer and how he's filtered that world into his own life, and it's also about the relationship of everyone to a person who has dementia, and it's like what his wife is going through, having a husband trying to keep up a front that his life is still operating, and he still has keeping his professional presence in intact somehow in the town. So it's
very hard. It's very hard, I have to say. I mean, I'm sure this is in your book, but man, in this business. And I include writers, and I include film, and maybe some other things. Everybody knows everything that goes on with you. It's very, very interesting. I mean, you're an asset, basically, to a publisher. You make money for them. So they're very interested in your general health and well-being, and in knowing what's going on in your life.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think that in Hollywood, I mean, everybody is sort of there's the town and the culture of the town, and everybody to some extent is an independent contractor, and the assets of the town to some extent are the green lights on the movies, and the elements that it takes to put those green lights together, and there are personal relationships along the way, but everybody's sort of trying to jump onto projects and to move projects forward. So it's very Darwinian in that way. I mean, I think that, having a, and people, the town cares to a certain extent, but at the same time, it's rather cruel. But the book's really about the personal relationships and these people finding each other and finding meaning in each other. So it's sort of character driven.
I discover that LA is a great readers community.
It is.
People in New York will scoff at that, but people in New York don't know what they're talking about.
No, more books are sold in California than anywhere. It's the most book reading. It's a place in the country. People read.
I know. I always love to read in L.A. L.A. has got great bookstores. It's got a great community centered around UCLA. It's a very seriously intellectual place. It doesn't get credit for that, but the people are smart people who live there. No matter what else they do or how good or not good they are at it, there's a lot of smart people in Los Angeles, I'll tell you.
No, it's true. It's a, you know, artistically also, there's a very intense creative community here. And, you know, I mean, I've been, for me, writing a novel, I'm fascinated to hear about process in writing fiction, having written screenplays for so long. And, you know, one thing about the book is about Peloponnesia is, you know, the author, his text is owned by someone else, and he's subjugated to a certain extent or in the process to all these other elements. And writing a novel and finishing it and having it be this contained piece where you hand it to someone, and if they choose to read it, that they will ingest the vision that you've created precisely as you created it to a large extent. It's, you know, a read is subjective, but still it's there on the page to be taken in. It's very different from the other mass media, from film and all the complications.
Well, film is collaborative. I mean, and that's what everybody always says about it. Film is collaborative. Writing novels ain't. Let me tell you, it's just one single vision, and you have to get it right. And it's, believe me, publishing is just as Darwinist as anything else. You have to have numbers, and you have to have shelf space.
And internationally, do you go on? Your books sell overseas as well. I mean, do you go on internet? Do you go foreign?
I'm in 18 languages. I have books in my house which were written by me, but I can't see that on the cover.
That's great. And do you go overseas, or you do?
I have toured or, you know, done readings or whatever you want to say in France and in Spain. I have a very good Spanish publisher and a good French publisher. And I've gone there and done the best I can. My Spanish is not great. My French is okay. After a couple of weeks in Paris, I'm okay. Not bad. But it's very, very difficult. To be on television in another language, believe me, your heart will beat hard.
That's difficult. And how have you managed to stay so focused in your niche? I mean, I've been jumping around from area to area, from screenwriting to trying to do some filmmaking to doing photography and writing fiction, and I'm constantly trying to do a triage to do less in a way. And how do you manage to just do what you do and just stay focused?
Well, for whatever reason, when I first discovered this period and the politics and the people and the stories and how multiple it all was of Europe in the 1930s and early 1940s, I became like passionate about it, and I'm still passionate about it. I couldn't do this otherwise. There's no discipline involved whatsoever. I live there in a strange way. Honestly, I do. As I've told you, this is not a very normal business.
Are you having pierogi for dinner tonight? I mean,
I could if I wanted to. I know where to get pierogi. There's a variety here known as Polish priest pierogi that they sell at the supermarket, and I know where to get it, and I know where to get other stuff like that, and I know how to make stuff like that. Yeah, I do that sometimes, but it's not that. I mean, more occasionally I might watch a 30s film, or I might I read a lot in the 30s and 40s. And, of course, the music, you know, you can just, you know, three notes of Glenn Miller will take you right to 1937. It's instant. It's astonishing. Same way Django Reinhardt, Stefan Grappelli, same way Artie Shaw. I mean, think about the music in the 1930s. Never mind the movies, which were fabulous.
What what we're going through today in the United States and in the world, in terms of the world economy and the American political scene, do you see is there a period in the area that in your historic specialization that you or context that this relates to more than another?
I can just say this. Some of the books that I've written have a kind of strange resonance, but I don't put it there on purpose. It's there if you find it there. You know, I mean, you can reach or not reach, but I don't try to make people go, aha, you know, he's on to something. I'm not on to anything. But when you read some of the books, there are, as I say, they're resonant. There's some kind of echo of what goes on now, because history doesn't exactly go in a straight line. It tends to go in circles. Mm-hmm. Moving circles? I don't know, like a slinky.
Yeah. That's an interesting. Well, you know, many of the books you've written have been pre-World War II.
War II started, I mean, it didn't start on one day. It started in, really, all of this stuff started very early. You have the Spanish Civil War, 36 to 38. Before that, you have the purges in Moscow and all the stuff that went on with Stalin. Then you go 36 to 38, Spanish Civil War. By 38, you have the appeasement. Hitler takes the top half of Czechoslovakia, doesn't take the bottom half till March 39, and doesn't attack Poland until August 39, and doesn't attack Russia until June 41, a year after he won in France. So the war started in various places at various times.
Uh-huh. All right. Well, Alan, it's been 42 years since we've spoken.
That's right.
And I feel like, you know, this has been a professional writing conversation. I've learned a lot and just fascinated hearing your approach and excited by the work that you've done and the work that you're doing in your new book.
Thank you.
And, it's great to get back with you. It's just
great to get back with you, and I wish you all good things with Peloponnesia.
Thank you.
Okay? All good writers' things.
Thank you. And, we'll talk soon. And, you know, my brother has a place in the Hamptons, and we sometimes go out there in the summer for a little while. So
call me.
When I'm out there, we'll get together.
Perfect. I look forward to it, Tom.
Okay. Take care.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Bye.